Welcome back to Innovation. And joining us now from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio is Dr. Handy Furkamandi, and he's an assistant professor of mechanical engineering at South Dakota School of Mines and Technology, and also Sky Rutan Bedard, and she's a mechanical engineering undergraduate researcher. And welcome both of you to Innovation. Thanks for being there.
Hi, thanks for having us.
So we're talking today about CubeSat, and let's start there and explain what a CubeSat is.
Absolutely. As you mentioned, I'm an assistant professor at the Mechanical Engineering of South Dakota School of Mines, and 2 years ago we started a project sponsoring the student organization around the CubeSats. So satellites have been there for the past few decades, but they are very large, bulky, in more than 1,000 kilograms, more than tons, and they are being launched with these heavy rockets that has been very expensive, and only governments could afford to do that. But CubeSats have evolved since 1999. A professor in Stanford for the first time introduced the idea of why we don't take these large and bulky equipment and make them miniaturized in a way that it's the process of developing of them is more efficient and in within few years and with low cost and low investment could be developed and launched to the space. So CubeSats basically are small cubes in the couple of units size, and each unit is a 4-inch cube or 10 centimeters each cube, and they could be in the size of 1U, 2U, and few units. And what they do is very similar what a satellite does, communicate to Earth, communicate to each other, and make measurements that are helpful in science missions.
And we're talking images coming back to Earth or just data?
The missions that CubeSats or generally satellites or small satellites are involved could be a variety of missions. The Earth observation missions involve the taking images and pictures, but it's not limited to the Earth observation. The satellite industry is a $300 billion industry that includes the deep space, includes the atmospheric sciences, and it involves the inter-satellite communication and localization. So in our particular project, yes, we are focused on using of vision-based camera, not just for remote sensing, but also for guidance, control, and navigation.
And Sky, you have been spending your summer kind of focusing on the camera aspect and the communications between the CubeSats. Is that right?
I've been focusing on the camera aspect. I have not been worrying too much about the communications.
Okay, so explain to me what you've been doing.
One of the problems with building a swarm of CubeSats is that it's a very new thing for us. You know, when you're talking about objects in space, usually if it's a dozen miles away, that's really close. So now we're trying to put these CubeSats into swarms that are, you know, I have one CubeSat and maybe a yard away from it, there's another CubeSat. So the question is, how do we make sure that these CubeSats are where we want them to be and, more importantly, not colliding? And that's what I've been working on. So, the idea is I have a tag. It's a, it's very similar to a QR tag. And, so long as my camera can see that tag, I can actually get information on the position and the location of that tag in 3D space. So the idea being that I can just put multiple of these tags onto a CubeSat, and now from one CubeSat, I know where all of my other CubeSat friends are.
And as this technology develops and grows and more launch into space, are we going to get too crowded up there, do you think?
That's a pretty significant concern. There's already been, there was actually already a concern. The FCC actually fined a company not too long ago for launching some satellites when they weren't authorized to do so because it was introducing more junk. But with careful with careful management and some techniques to make sure that when a satellite is past its useful lifetime, it can safely go to either a particular orbit that's deemed a graveyard zone where it's just an area for junk, or it can just deorbit, we should be fine.
And I also want to add a note about particularly majority of the CubeSats, they are flying in the low Earth orbit, which is about 400 to 600 kilometers. And in this orbit, there is still atmosphere, and that drag causes them to lose altitude. And in almost all cases, there's a lifespan of 2 to 3 years for a CubeSat, and they enter the Earth and safely diminish their life. So that concern is not really a big concern for the small satellites once they are in the low Earth orbit. Now, if we go to a deeper space, higher altitudes, then yes, there will be issues on that. But another thing is that actually CubeSats have been helpful in this addressing this problem, because lately this particular idea swarm or the various tasks that they can do, one of the ideas that some of the research institutions are following is to collect the debris using single or multiple of these satellites, particularly the debris that are compromising the space station, that really is important to make sure that it's not colliding.
How are these launched?
These are the launch is actually pretty simple. The common thing to do now, you'll have some large company or government that wants to launch their own satellite, but there's always a little bit of extra space hidden in there. And the idea is that you can put these extra CubeSats into those extra spaces for a relatively low price. And then, they're launched up, and at some point these extra CubeSats are separated from the main payload, and they can be distributed into the correct orbit by the dispenser.
Is this going to eliminate the need for the bigger satellites, or is there still a purpose for those?
There will still be... I don't think we're ever going to get away from big satellites on the whole, but I think we're going to see more and more of the jobs that once took large satellites taken over by CubeSats.
Also, another consideration is that CubeSats, because of their smaller size and their limited capability in terms of power, they cannot have the same functionality of a larger satellite. Now, if we can implement the idea of swarm in the space, which is a much more recent idea, it has started only in 2013 with NASA Ames Research Center, where they started with the EDSN for eight number of small sats. Then it is possible to create distributed instruments where part of the functionality is in each of these agents, and they connect and communicate and work together, then it is possible to take more of the tasks of larger satellites. But as of now, small CubeSats, are majority of them are limited. But astonishingly, there has been very interesting science missions that have already been done, especially for the remote sensing and Earth observation.
Hmm. Well, like all things, think of computers 30 years ago and what you have today, many on our wrist. So with everything, things get smaller as we learn. But NASA is definitely involved in this project.
Yes, NASA is involved in this project from many aspects. There's a Space Grant Consortium at the South Dakota that has sponsored initially in 2017 a creation of a student organization, and that targets the educational launch of the CubeSat, and on 2019, I started a research initiation grant that was funded by NASA's EPSCoR program. And we are a group from South Dakota State University, from Engineering and Computing Department, and from the Mechanical and Computer Science and Engineering Department of South Dakota School of Mines. So this is a a statewide collaboration. And one of the reasons that the NASA space grant was interested in this project was the fact that it has the potential to impact the needs of South Dakota as a state.
How so?
As I mentioned, Earth observation is important, weather is important, but obviously we don't have the hurricanes or problems that the southern states has. Still, there's applications that are important in the Midwest. For example, the observation of minerals finding resources of oil and gas and various remote sensing could end up finding new resources. Another application is the disaster monitoring. When there's this constellation, recently they have increased the monitoring frequency to even a 3 hour. So in the 3 hour update, there's possibility of even having an update of the state, where if there's a fire, if there is a disaster, or if there's a contamination that is going on, that can be monitored. Or even another application is the agricultural engineering, where multispectral imaging can be used for finding the sources of disease in the that are creating problem for the industry. So the applications could be depending on what payload is the satellites are going to take with themselves, because what we are currently are focused is the guidance, navigation, and control. And as Sky mentioned, we are creating the very close proximity of these satellites that could be used for application of monitoring. But for the science mission, that's going to be the next phase that we are planning to involve with a collaboration with the scientific application that has implications for the state as well.
So how is is there going to be a how is the data received? Is there going to be a specific location? Is it different universities? Is it someplace like Eros? I mean, somewhere the satellite information has to be received, correct?
Yes.
That's
actually a really interesting thing. Right now the most common thing is actually to get the help of ham radio operators. You know, so you have someone who on their own free time will help collect the information that's being transmitted back from these satellites. It's essentially a decentralized approach. So you could have, I could set up my own ham radio and I could start receiving information from CubeSats today if I wanted to. That being said, this can be done across the country, and in fact, it's done across the world. And that's, there's work being done on different radio bands that could eliminate the need for this, but it's still one of the things that's helped make the ham radio community has undoubtedly made CubeSats as we know them today possible.
Also, besides the amateur community that has been very supportive of the CubeSat launches and communications, there is already other approaches to communicate data to Earth. There are centers that NASA operates, like, for example, the Ames has their operation in the Santa Clara University of California, and they communicate through their network of satellites and receivers. And there is another approach that I recently, when I was visiting the Small Satellite Conference, I noticed that there is some constellations, for example, Global Star, that some of the CubeSats communicate their data with that constellation, and they have a very good rate and capability to be able to communicate it to Earth. But in the EDSN, which was done by NASA 4 or 5 years ago, it was demonstrated that even CubeSats as small as 1U or 1.5U can create cross-link communication, which is the communication among each other, and were able to also, as Sky mentioned, to communicate it to Earth.
So I'm going to go back to the ham operators. Are there a lot of ham operators still practicing, and do they really know what to do with this data once they receive it?
You would be surprised. There's a surprising number.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I haven't been able to set up my own ham radio station yet. But for instance, at the School of Mines, we have an amateur radio club, and I know that after taking my radio merit badge, back when I was still in Boy Scouts, I was able to see that there were still a lot of ham radio operators, and they are, they know what they're doing.
Okay, and so I'm my brain gets kind of stuck at Eros Data Center and the images that come from the satellites, and researchers can go and use those images. And I'm just wondering if there's, with CubeSats, if there's that deposit of information for researchers to go looking at that.
I think so. NASA Goddard Research Center has a space flight center. They are hosting a data center for the CubeSat and small satellite data that is available to public, and it has been the source of many of the researchers to use those observations for Earth, and in intelligence society community also it has interest in that as well. So
I'll add one thing. One of the whole points of the CubeSat as a concept is that even if there isn't some satellite out there that's producing the information you need, it's surprisingly manageable to get your own satellite up there to collect any additional information.
So what is next for your research?
Well, the next for the research is to we are extending to the science mission. We want to involve our industry collaboration is with L3 Communication West Division at Utah. We are looking at various communication capabilities that they have, and we can integrate to this CubeSat, we are still in very early phases. There's 1 year of the research initiation is still ongoing, which with the objective of creating a swarm of intelligent autonomous behavior where these satellites can behave autonomously without requiring any command and control from the Earth. And ultimately, the idea, we are pursuing various ideas that could have implications to the state of South Dakota, and one of them is to use the multispectral imaging, where we want to connect with the ERAS at Sioux Falls and mm-hmm. other institutions that are in the Earth observation, and see how this CubeSat swarm and multiple of CubeSats that they can do accurate positioning and attitude control with respect to each other, how they can serve to the particular mission that can also be having implications for the state and have the real application. Another thing is that we want to see if this could create this could bring part of the new jobs, new industries, new economy, and create economy boost for the region.
All right, I want to thank you both very much for joining us today, and I look forward to having more conversations about this as everything moves forward. Thank you so very much for coming on the program today.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you for hosting us. Thank you.
Dr. Hadi Firkamandi is an assistant professor of mechanical engineering at South Dakota School of Mines, and Sky Rutan Bedard is a mechanical engineering undergraduate researcher also at School of Mines.